Funding for Roots, Race, and Culture is provided in part by the Norman C. and Barbara L. Tanner Charitable Support Trust and by donations to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, you're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, the podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. I'm Lonzo Liggins.
And I'm Daynor Gerald. Being LGBTQ+ in Utah can come with its challenges and successes. Being a person of color in Utah can also come with plenty of peaks and valleys. But what are the challenges and successes of being an LGBTQ+ person of color? American writer Audre Lorde, who described herself as a black lesbian feminist, socialist, mother warrior, and poet, once wrote, "It is not our differences that divide us. It is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences."
Yes, I love that quote. So recently, Daynor and I spoke to a group of BIPOC and LGBTQ students at La Europa Academy, a local private boarding school. When we asked them about their concerns, they said the following: being heard without judgment, being valued for who they were, losing stories and books about people like them. And some just simply wanted to be humanized and not politicized. So in the words of Audre Lorde, let's recognize, accept, and celebrate some differences. And we have two amazing guests today to help us do just that. Welcome.
Nice to have you here. Olivia, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Daynor. Lonzo, it's so great to be here with the both of you.
Oh, thank you. And we would love for you to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
Oh, where do I start? There's so many facets to who I am. But my name is Olivia Jaramillo, and I'm the Director of Public Outreach and Training at Equality Utah. And I'm also the host of a radio show on KRCL 90.9. So it's really cool. I love what I do. I love entertaining. But at the same time, I love advocating for all of the communities that I come to, I identify as, be a part of, and also hopefully raise some understanding around. So I was born in central Mexico. I immigrated to the United States when I was 14 years old. I lived in El Paso, Texas for just a little bit. And then I went active duty. I joined the United States Air Force and I did 20 years of active duty service. That was a great adventure. That's how I always describe it. And I served tours into Iraq when we were in that conflict 20 years ago. Mm. So don't Google how old I am, please. Yes, and then once I retired, you know, I kind of continued wanting to do some more advocating because I was very, very privileged to be one of the first members in 2016, I think it was the fourth or fifth DOD-wide, to be able to take advantage of some policies that were enacted by the Obama administration. I was able to transition from male to female while still serving on active duty, and that really showed me that when we understand each other, when we know each other beyond just knowing one facet of who we are, we really come to understand those things that we feel may divide us.
Awesome.
Or that we feel we may not know of.
Yeah. Yeah.
So once I retired from the military, I wanted to keep pursuing that kind of advocacy work. And I wanted to do something a bit calmer, like go get a PhD. But then then I ended up doing something even calmer. I ended up going into politics.
I want to get to your story in a second, because I love your story. But I want to introduce our other guest here, Harry. Harry, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hello, everyone. Great to join you, Lonzo, Daynor. Thank you for having me on. My name is Harry Hawkins. I am the former director of the LGBT Resource Center at the University of Utah. Mm. I've been doing this work for over a decade now, and many of you are probably like, where is this voice from? I am originally from the state of Mississippi. Ooh. So yes.
growing, I'm a Mississippi fan here.
I know. That's why we're on this side of the state. Yeah. Right? So doing this work as an LGBTQ person has been very impactful, because growing up in places like Mississippi, you didn't always see like my perspective expressed or seen. I started this work when I was at Mississippi State University as a student, and my university at the time didn't have any type of LGBTQ infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So that was really where this whole advocacy bug first bit me. I had the opportunity to go work at the Human Rights Campaign, which is the nation's largest LGBTQ nonprofit, as a community organizer and a lobbyist. So working on these issues at the macro level, legislation, doing the politics thing as well, has been very fulfilling. But after 2016 and that election, I very much wanted to take a step back from community organizing. And I was like, what can I do? I went back to my first love, higher education, working with this next generation of students. It excites me. And working specifically with our queer students, very exciting. And I've had the opportunity to do that for the last 8 years. And it's very much rewarding. And the last thing I will say, you know, just sitting here right now, I'm thinking as a gay, mixed race, Southern, first generational person, I am walking intersections. All of us are multi-layered individuals. And so these types of conversations, we need to keep having them because they're so important. So so thank you both for having us here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What is your racial mix, if you don't mind?
Yes, Black, Asian, and I believe there's white in there somewhere as well. I haven't done the ancestry DNA thing yet.
But I think we all got a little Native American.
A little bit, you know, I'm avoiding it. Yeah.
This next question is for you. I wanted to get back to you, Olivia. Tell us about your work with Equality Utah.
Our organization, we are the state's premier LGBTQ rights and advocacy organization, and we've been working on Capitol Hill now since 2001. And one of the things that we're so fortunate to have been able to do is that Utah is now one of the most conservative states in the country with the most protections for the LGBTQ community.
Wow.
And not a lot of people know that because we do hear about a lot of the challenges that we're still facing. We hear so much about that. But we don't focus sometimes enough on the positive things that we have been able to do in the state. So one of the things that I personally do at Equality Utah is I direct our corporate education program, where we look to bring our ethos, Equality Utah's ethos of finding common ground, building on shared values, and we bring it to companies, corporations, to organizations, agencies throughout the state of Utah, and also beyond that. We've been fortunate enough to go to New York, to New Orleans, to San Diego. So we've been able to spread our message nationwide, and we're really, really fortunate to be able to share what really has been pivotal in making a difference in the state of Utah.
That's amazing.
It surprises me there's so many protections.
That's good. Well, I mean, you know, it's like you said, like that's not always being talked about. You know, she's making the point very clear.
And you know, one thing that people, like, whenever we tell them we had non-discrimination protections in the state of Utah for the LGBTQ community, for race, ethnicity, religious minorities, 5 years ahead of the national curve, that's really wonderful to see that that happened right here in Utah in 2015. That was a really important moment for what lay ahead. And it really showed us that there is a Utah way that we can work together.
That's great. Now, I have a question for you, Harry.
Sure.
That's pretty good news, right? But, you know, as we've discovered talking to people on this show before, there's always a risk of things sort of sliding back. And so how do we keep the gas pedal going to keep that positive energy happening? What do you think is good to make that happen in Utah to continue to progress?
Absolutely. You know, we all have the pleasure of being in an election year right now, right? And I think what we are seeing, especially over the last month, which has felt like a decade, is civic renewal. We're seeing people get engaged again. There is excitement. There is this desire to have hope and joy. Yeah. And so I would say, like, what was working in 2015? Clearly, Utah was doing something right in 2015. Mm-hmm. There has been some backsliding. And so how can the state get back to that energy of saying, how can we look forward to accepting all, working with all, welcoming everyone here? I mean, the state is going to host the Olympics again.
Right. Again.
Right.
And
right.
So these are values that are going to have to move back to the forefront again. And so I think right now in Utah and as a country, we're looking around saying, maybe we've taken our foot off the pedal. Maybe we're letting folks represent us who don't have the best interests of everyone at heart. And how can I get reinvolved again? That would be my message of just saying, look at your elected officials. Say, are they really speaking for me? Is this the tone that I want? Do I want folks being attacked? Not necessarily. And I think Utahns can agree on that.
And that's a national issue.
Exactly.
I agree 100%.
I wanted to talk about specifically being, you know, LGBTQ plus and a person of color. Because there's this article from Dr. Amir Ahuja in psychiatry.org. It's called Understanding the Barriers of Coming Out for LGBTQ plus, People of Color. So in the article, I'm going to paraphrase just a few keys of it. It says that research has shown that Black, Hispanic, and Asian youth are far less likely to come out based on their families and cultures, strong beliefs. Some of it's like really strict religious beliefs, rigid gender roles. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, we both know from, you know, we all know from being Black and Hispanic, that there's, you know, a sense of machismo sometimes in our communities. Also that racial minority LGBTQ plus individuals sometimes report exclusion from certain events and spaces and racism even within their own community, in the LGBTQ community. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you guys want to speak on that? Do you want to speak on that, Olivia?
Well, there definitely is a machismo aspect to these cultures. I remember growing up in Mexico, and just as my life has evolved and the way that where I've ended up being, where I live now, and the time that I transitioned in my life, I was an adult with a career, and I had that opportunity to do so, that I could support myself financially, that I was in a different state, mental health-wise, that I was stronger. I can't even imagine what I would have gone through had I tried to come out, transition when I still lived in Mexico. Mexico is considered one of the most dangerous countries for transgender people when it comes to the homicide rate. It's second only to Brazil. And I can't even imagine what it would be. Even now, my family, when I have a great relationship with my family in Mexico. And I think part of that does have to do with the fact that I came out to them through Facebook, so it doesn't feel so real that this happened. Yeah. But they even tell me, you know, we want you to come visit, but it's dangerous here. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous with the cartels. And again, I think it's just in general, that culture, it can be really difficult.
Mm. Wow, that's something.
What about you, Harry? Mississippi. I mean, that had to have been a unique experience down there. That had to have been a little bit of a challenge at times.
Yeah, two things come to mind when we're talking about, especially with culture and these aspects. One, in Mississippi, telling my own story of telling my mother on a veranda. It was the most southern set you could think of. Absolutely. Ever. It was in the middle of the summer, and I told her, and it was the most nonchalant answer ever. I mean, she was just like, okay, cool, and moving on, and then, you know, made a joke about, you asked for Elton John's greatest hits one year. That was kind of a hit. I was like, thanks, Mom. Love you, Mom.
She was
paying attention. And she accepted me, and she talked about being raised Buddhist in Thailand and saying, you know, these are not exactly the values that we place. We just look at people as a whole. Mm. And that was important. And so I'm very fortunate, because that's not the story always for others. But the second thing I would say, when I used to talk about cultural norms and what we think is like masculine and feminine, if we all got in a time machine right now and went back to 18th century France, first of all, it would be terrifying. Secondly, we all wouldn't be in the same room together. We wouldn't be allowed to be. Mm-hmm. But also, French men were wearing powdered wigs, makeup. They would be what you would think are drag kings and queens now, right? But that was the epitome of being a masculine man back then. Right. So these cultural norms are always changing. Mm-hmm. They're always shifting. And so I think these conversations are healthy to say, like, when we look at like masculine and feminine, those are just defined by society. And I think they can be much more fluid than that. Mm-hmm. And we're having those conversations now, which are good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So I have a question about just the Utah experience. And first of all, I wanted to do this earlier. I want to thank you for your service. And I really appreciate KRCL as well. They're fans of our show. We're fans of KRCL. So you're doing great stuff. And so, Olivia, my question for you is, what is the Utah experience like being a trans queer person and living here? How does this community experience work?
It's very interesting, Daniel. It's one of the things that I'll give you this answer in a couple of steps. So when I first came to Utah, what brought me to Utah was the military. When I was active duty, mm-hmm. I was stationed up at Hill Air Force Base. That's what brought me to Utah. So I've always, when I started experiencing Utah, even before I transitioned, I always had this shield, this armor, per se, of being active duty. And we have a pretty high respect. We're a pretty patriotic country. Yeah. So it's very respected to be a member of the military. So I've always had this shield that even as I transitioned and people would see me in public, they would see my uniform. Mm. So I always had this shield that would kind of soften the blow, if you want to say,
sure.
Or that it would actually give people a different perspective on what trans people can do, and what, and that we're just human beings that love our country, that can serve in the military. So it's always been very unique in that way.
Wow, that's cool. Wow.
What do you think of, like, compared to Mississippi, do you think Utah's more progressive or less progressive than Mississippi?
I think when we're looking at comparables and various things, I think we have a lot of overlapping qualities. You know, religion is very important in mm-hmm. both states, yeah. Different denominations over both states, Southern Baptist, Mississippi, the LDS Church here in Utah. But I think, like, there's a familial sense of community and family being at the heart of things. So those are the things that I see as comparable. But there are the obvious differences, especially the food, as I always like to say. I miss my Southern food so much. No disrespect to Utah.
Where can I get a good glass of iced tea?
Right? Where can I get my daily diabetes? You know, that's important. And so I think there's a shared story amongst the queer community across this country. It's just that striving for acceptance in spite of any differences that are out there. And in a way, I always say this is the American story, freedom. The freedom to be who you are, the freedom to live without consequences,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
I think this is something that all of us across this country, no matter which state we live in, can absolutely just, it resonates with us because we're Americans, and this striving for freedom is in our core of who we are.
I just have to say this, and this is a hot take, and I don't even know if it's gonna make it on the air, but within a week of living here, going to, you know, a job place that I was at, I had some comments that I heard, and it became sort of apparent to me that when it came to racism in the state of Utah, which of course, listen, there's racism all across the United States, so that doesn't make Utah unique. But I felt like from some of the things that I heard, people were more racist toward Mexicans or Hispanics, Latino people, than black people. Hmm. And I'm kind of curious about your experience in regard to that. And if you have anything to say also, you know, because, I mean, people may not know your ethnicity.
Oh, no.
When they meet you, you know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
But then somehow, I'm sure they find out.
Eventually.
But, yeah, eventually, right? So can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
You know, being Mexican, being an immigrant in Utah, whenever it comes out, people tend to be surprised because I'm sure they can tell that you know I'm Hispanic or Latina, but then whenever I tell them, oh yeah, I immigrated from Mexico, one of the first things people comment on is my accent, and
right.
that I don't sound Mexican,
mm.
and I think it's more of a geographical thing that we're seeing that because we are perhaps a little bit closer, there is a closer demographic to Mexico from here, you see that there is a little bit more interaction. Not in a negative way, but in a way that we hear about whether people immigrate as documented or undocumented status. So I think you start seeing those patterns. So then when they hear my accent, it becomes that point of contention. It just always ends up starting a conversation around, well, this is just an accent. You know, anybody can develop a non-regional American accent. And it starts that conversation. My point always is bringing understanding and furthering that understanding for us. And even here in the state of Utah, I have even noticed myself that there tends to be communities where we do tend to isolate ourselves as immigrants.
Right.
Because we want to be around what's familiar to us, and that's mm-hmm. understandable.
And does it,
we do it abroad when we go travel. Like, I'll find other
yeah.
Americans, that comfort zone, you know, it happens.
So I'm really, so one sec, sorry. I'm really interested in this. So, like, then what is your experience like then as a trans person in the Utah Mexican community?
It's very interesting whenever I do go on air in some of the Hispanic radio stations or TV stations, one of the things that they always angle at is that they want to provide that exposure because very much like we spoke of earlier, there is a culture that it is frowned upon
yeah.
to transition, to come out as gay, to do anything that is related with the LGBTQ community. And you do tend to find that. You do tend to find that there is a bit of an isolation of people that do come out, especially as immigrants. You already have one status that is, let's say, counting against you,
right.
but you may not speak the language, and now you're coming out as part of the LGBTQ community.
Wow.
And it can be a really, really daunting experience for that person.
I imagine there could be some mental health issues when you have all of that sort of on your shoulders. You know?
Absolutely, and there's also a lot of issues, unresolved issues specifically with immigrant communities when it comes to that mental health aspect. There is the mental health aspect of the trauma of immigrating, which a lot of the times we don't think of it as trauma, but sometimes it can be because you're not coming to America because you want to. You may come due to the necessity of financial burdens, violence in your country. There are so many aspects that already are bringing you here that to properly acculturate in America, it really becomes an issue.
Wow.
Well, you know, and that brings up a great point. So in that article that I was talking about, psychiatry.org, one of the things that they said is LGBTQ plus people of color can take steps to heal the mental stress by finding spaces with people like them in order to feel less alone or isolated. Now, Harry, you could definitely speak about the value of the LGBTQ plus groups because you have been in that world before. So tell us about the value of that.
It's very much valuable, and I was thinking about this. I was talking to some students yesterday, and, you know, I was talking about when I was a college student, when dinosaurs were on the planet, and I was explaining to them of, like, what it was like to go meet other people like me or meet folks like Olivia. I was like, it used to be you would go to a bar back in the day, and the students had this look on their face like, why would you have to go to a bar? And I said, because there was no smartphones. The internet was still, it was there, but, it, you know, you were chat rooms or things like that. So having these spaces has always been that sanctuary for our community. I mean, when you have folks who come from like rural areas where you don't meet other LGBTQ folks, many times I would interact with students where it's like, this is the first time I was in a room with other people like me. And you just see like the weight come off of them and you see them start to bloom as a person. And that's why these spaces are so impactful and they're so important. And I think like, what we're talking about, these layers of oppression that people face and the weights that are placed down on them. And if anything that we can do as a society to remove some of those weights where folks can be their full selves, these are things we should strive for.
Yeah.
Can I add to that?
Of course.
And I love what you mentioned because a really good friend of mine who's also a part of our education program at Equality Utah, his name is Stacy Hartke. We went to train in New York City. We went to do some presentations out there. And on one of our days that we didn't have anything to do, we went and walked around the Bronx and Brooklyn. We were just walking around and we both felt this ease of, why do we feel so comfortable here?
Wow.
And it wasn't until like we really started noticing, well, we can see ourselves absolutely everywhere. And it wasn't intentional, but you could see Latinos, Latinas, Hispanics, you could see the Black community everywhere. And it was so wonderful to just kind of release that tension. And I'm not saying that it's bad in Utah. There are wonderful people here. There's wonderful allies. But that is that one point that we always try to get others to understand of us.
Yeah, it's, it's a sort of something to strive for, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's great having those groups because I wanted to preface because you were the head of the LGBT Resource Center up at the University of Utah, correct? Because I just wanted our audience to know that. You know, a lot of these groups, like because I grew up here and it was just so nice to be able, because people think that you can just walk up to another person of color, you know, or whoever, and just walk up and just start chatting with them, you know, and they're uncomfortable. Like, that's how you just meet people. But a lot of times there's shyness. There's an uncomfortable facet to that. So having these groups makes it so that the ice is broken, you know. There's just such wonder to having that. And I want to talk about the elephant in the room that's been happening recently, which is HB 261. For those that don't know, HB 261 is basically the bill that is the anti-DEI bill. It bans the words diversity, equity, and inclusion and any diversity groups from Utah public education and government. I would love for you both to speak on that. Do you want to start with that?
The first thing, it's the law now.
Okay.
As of July, it is the law here in the state of Utah. And, you know, going back to what we mentioned earlier, I've been reflecting on this. Utah is going to host the Olympics, celebrating diversity, differences, the best in our humankind. And to make a statement like that, that says these are the things that we don't value, these are the type of folks we don't want to highlight in the state of Utah, I would have to ask the question of our elected officials, are we ready for the Olympics? because this environment goes completely antithetical to the Olympic motto, just on its head. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I'm very concerned about, and we were talking about the spaces and the weight being taken off of us, the other thing these spaces do, not just that social and belonging, resources. Mm-hmm. As well. Like if you ever need anything as an LGBTQ person, maybe you're having issues at home, maybe if you're a trans person transitioning, connecting folks to those resources was one of the important things that these spaces did. And so as we've seen, the climate on campus over the past year has been rough, and these are things that the public can go look at online. Mm-hmm. The first line of, I guess you could say, defense or really support for those students when we would have incidents like the F word being written in a residence hall or a gentleman driving through campus yelling at Muslim students while having a swastika on his truck. I mean, these are things that happened this past school year. Yeah. Our centers would step in and support those students in any way. And many, sometimes students would say, I'm okay, I'm all right. But mm-hmm. sometimes students would say, hey, I just need to be amongst my folks right now to process what just happened to me. Where are those spaces? Mm. They're gone. Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm scared. I'm very scared for those students. And I think parents at home watching this should be asking these questions as well, especially of the University of Utah administrators. What are you doing to protect these students? What are you doing to protect my child?
And not just University of Utah, any university in the state as well.
Absolutely.
Right? And, this is a statewide banning.
The other thing to clarify, and I've seen some discussion of this online, our favorite place, right? Mm-hmm. Is there's a misunderstanding going on where folks are saying, well, the legislature said they had to do this. No. The legislature didn't say that the University of Utah had to close these centers. The University of Utah went a further step in doing that.
I think there's probably, you know, another side to the story. I think a lot of people, at least this is me playing devil's advocate, are saying that they feel that white students were being left out of these groups and that white students weren't allowed, which I don't think is the case.
No.
And whenever you're in any space where there's either, you know, LGBTQ people or people of color, have you ever been in a situation where people were told that whites weren't allowed in that situation, Olivia?
I have not personally been involved in any situations or instances where we've excluded anybody. I feel like one of the biggest things for me that is that the LGBTQ is a community of love and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And we accept everybody. And even furthermore, as in the work that I do, and I think that we both do, is we don't look to exclude anybody. Mm-hmm. For us, creating belonging includes everybody. And that is really how it should be. I think a lot of these setbacks that we're going through in the state of Utah are due to fear, a fear that life as we know it per se is going to go away. Whatever our culture that we thought was here will be surpassed or replaced with DEI or anything that it brings with it. And that is absolutely not it. One of the biggest things for me is that we start with the work of how do we understand minority communities? Mm-hmm. How do we understand those struggles? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to talk about other issues. It simply means we're focusing on what is important for some communities that have historically gone through some issues.
Yeah. You know, there's this funny story that you were telling me the other day about you and Stacy. You traveled down to Richfield, correct?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, and just to show people the familiarity of who you are and then, you know, and make people comfortable knowing that you're a human being, and you know, once they realize that, it breaks down that barrier. Can you tell that story a little bit?
Yes, I can. So like part of my job at Equality Utah is with this education program. We had a wonderful partnership with the Utah court system where we went and educated and presented to every courthouse in the state of Utah. So that entailed going to some places that I had never traveled to myself. I had never been, for example, to get to the story, I had never been to Richfield, Utah. Okay. And so there we are.
You have.
So there we are, me and Stacy are driving, and we're thinking, we're going into the heart of Utah, and we didn't know what to expect. We were wondering, what's going to happen there? When people received us there, they received us with curiosity, but when we were done with our presentations, you saw something different. they saw a human aspect of who we are because we also allowed that space to humanize them. Mm-hmm. And that was wonderful to see.
Yeah.
That was absolutely wonderful to see how they know Stacy from being on TV, right. But at the same time, they may have thought they had never met a trans person in their life. And suddenly, here she is, 6'4" in heels. and it really brought a different perspective to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I have to say, you are the tallest Latin woman that I've ever met.
I think I do hear that a lot, and I just tell people, you know, I had a twin brother in the womb, and I ate him, so I'm twice as tall, so.
Beautiful.
So, Harry, what are your thoughts on what we can do to remedy, obviously, other than change the laws, what we can do to remedy the treatment for young LGBTQ students who are, let's say, coming to Utah, and they're for the first time, and they want to feel comfortable here? What could the state do to change that?
I think the first thing I think about, business owners, the business community, your places and your spaces, making sure that they're welcoming for folks, knowing that these types of centers are gone from the university campuses. But however, you know, the Utah Pride Center is very much still here in the state of Utah, just downtown in a new location. They are still there to provide amazing resources. Olivia's group, Equality Utah, are out here as well doing this fantastic work. And so there are still resources there. I think second group I would think about too are parents as well, knowing with your parents group like PFLAG or InCircle as well, how you can support these students who may be away from home, not having those connections when they're on campus. I think that is very important as well. But the thing I think about coming from Mississippi and Olivia, you might can relate to this too, doing this work with organizing, when you feel like you get beat up, that's when something beautiful happens, when the community leans in. Things blossom and they're beautiful. And I'm thinking to myself that this is a really good call for organizing and folks to come together and say, hey, I didn't like this outcome. This is not what we want to be saying to the world, really, as the microscope's going to be back on Utah again. How can we come together and start having these conversations and then maybe work our way up to those elected officials and say, you know, these are not the values I want for my community or my state. What can we do? Let's change this. Because Olivia is exactly right earlier. There's this fear. It's almost like a zero-sum game of if we have these things, you're taking it away from someone else. I always say, I'm not a math expert, but I will say, you're doing the wrong math. Yeah. This is not subtraction, it's addition.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so
yes.
Change the equation.
I love that.
Switch
yes.
it up.
Absolutely
yes.
love that. You mentioned community, and that's really exciting. And after, we have a clip. A community event is happening, and we have a clip from Russell Roots, who works with Utah Film Center, for a film festival that's coming up very soon. So let's take a look at that clip, and then I want to ask you guys, we have Black Joy, I want to hear about Queer Joy and what it's like to get together for things like this. So check this out.
I am Russell Roots, the Director of Film Exhibition with the Utah Film Center, the Black Bold and Brilliant Program Manager, and the Festival Director for the Utah Queer Film Festival. The Utah Queer Film Festival is a film festival celebrating queer stories from around the world, and this year really focusing on local filmmakers as well. The Queer Film Festival and Black Bold and Brilliant are opportunities to look at marginalized communities and find allyship by looking at stories that you can identify with. I think it is the only queer film festival in the state. The festival will take place at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake, and it will be in person October 25th through the 27th. We've got international films celebrating queer diversity. We've got local films. We really put some intention into finding local films this year. Films about music, films about family-friendly topics, films about seniors in the golden years and the specific topics they have to deal with. I think it's important to participate in festivals like this because I think we already have a mentality that makes sense when we think about Sundance in the same way. The state activates around Sundance because they know they're going to get quality storytelling and they're going to see talent from those films and have a unique opportunity to engage with it. The Utah Queer Film Festival is exactly that. The same thing, but the focus is much more on the LGBTQ plus community. So we've got an opportunity to really just showcase stories that don't get the opportunity elsewhere.
Right here in Utah.
Right here in Utah. So tell us, what is some of the joyful experiences? Obviously, that festival is going to be a lot of fun. And there's lots of other things happening. What are some of the joys, the things that you love about your community?
My reaction from hearing about that film festival is I was like, our ancestors dreamed. Our ancestors dreamed about a lot of things, but they dreamed of a day where we're having a film festival sharing our stories. And imagine talking to a queer person in Utah from maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago. And now it's like we're having this film festival. It's beautiful and it speaks to that progress. And it's so important to share those stories and see those stories highlighted. And I think about really lives that you're saving. When you think of LGBTQ youth who are seeing that, seeing those representations, seeing those positive representations as well, that's the joy, that's the queer joy I get, where I'm just like, really what drives me doing this work and puts my feet on the ground every day is I think about, I want the next generation to have it better than I did. That's what gets me up every day. And so when I see things like that, I go for joy, and I think our ancestors dreamed.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. And the dream is alive.
Olivia's just a joy to be around. You're around her for like 5 minutes, and you're already laughing. So, you know, tell us about some of the great things that you're doing, and like, you know, some of the good experiences that you have.
Well, one of the things that's so wonderful that I love what you said, Harry. And we don't realize sometimes that we're going through a lot of hardships, but this is still the best time in history to be part of the LGBTQ community. Mm. And it's so important that we never forget that. We may be going through challenges, we may be going through setbacks, but this is still the best time to transition. There is more information out there about what that experience is like. There's more help for individuals that identify as gay, lesbian, bisexuals. We have centers. We have so many things that bring us joy. And even at Equality Utah, we just had this past Monday an event where we talked about celebrating joy, the joy within the LGBTQ community. So it's so wonderful to see that now we have that ability, that we do belong in downtown Salt Lake City, that we do belong in the downtown area of any major city, that we are spoken of in Congress, at every state legislature. This is the best time to be alive as an LGBTQ person. And I think that's a wonderful, joyous thing to always have in mind and to celebrate.
I hope it stays that way, too. I think that, you know, there are these laws and legislations, things that are happening around our country, book bannings and stuff like that, where it does feel like it's things are being threatened and there is a bit of an attack, you know. When we were talking to some of the students at La Europa, they really were centered around gender. That's like a big deal among young people today, is this idea of gender. Is there any way you guys could speak on that and just tell us what your thoughts are with that? Like, what would you say to a young person who was, you know, having issues with that in their school? Start with you, Olivia.
Well, I think very much it goes with what I just spoke about, that now is the best time because there is so much information, so many resources out there. Mm-hmm. If there is somebody out there that is looking, for example, at this episode, I hope that they're able to see that there is a road ahead, that, you know, we do suffer great numbers in terms of, or higher rates when it comes to mental health issues, when it comes to depression within the LGBTQ community, specifically the trans youth community. It goes through a lot of mental health issues and even suicide rates. You do see that those suicide rates tend to be higher within LGBTQ youth, specifically transgender youth. Mm-hmm. So whenever they see somebody that is a little bit further down the road, hopefully that gives them a path forward. I can have a career. I can do things with my life. Mm-hmm. And we need to start addressing that more. We need to start humanizing trans people more. We need to start talking about this issue of gender in a way that it's not just talking about it. I always talk about, we need to speak to trans people more about other issues than just transgender issues. We need to simply normalize a conversation with a trans person about anything.
Right. Oh, that's great. I love that.
So I have a question for you, Harry. Yeah. What are some ways in which people can be better allies, more supportive to the LGBTQ plus community? And can you give us maybe some resources for people who may have lost a little something?
Two things resonate with me. Mm-hmm. especially in the environment we're in, and almost like dovetailing off of what Olivia just said, see humanity first. We're all human beings. We share this planet. Seeing humanity first, I always say start there. Mm. Secondly, when we talk about our allies, ally is an action. It's not a title. Mm. It's also not an endpoint. It's something that you do. And I hear that many times with allies when they say, oh, I heard something, I wasn't sure how to respond, I didn't know what to do in that moment. I always say, remember, it's an action. And it's never like you get to this one spot, I got my ally sticker, I'm good now. Mm. You have to continually keep learning. There are many, many resources out there for folks who want to know more. I say with parents, always looking at PFLAG or GLSEN, GLSEN as we call it. GLAAD is another one that looks at media representation. Anything that Equality Utah is putting out is going to be exceptional, along with the Human Rights Campaign. There's many, many resources out there that folks can access if they want more information. I know the internet can be a little interesting at times, but there are things out there for allies. And just going back to how I started, remember, it's an action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you mind if I add something to that?
Yeah, please do.
One thing that I love about allyship, and it very much goes with what you said, I feel like we're just going off of each other today, which is great. But when being an ally doesn't mean that you need a rainbow t-shirt or you need a pride flag and that's what makes you an ally. Mm. Very much what you said, an ally requires action. And that doesn't mean going to a protest or rally. Sometimes something as simple as listening to somebody, listening to understand them, and being that person that is there for them, that is the biggest thing that an ally can be. Anybody watching the show can literally become an ally in an instant by simply listening to understand to somebody that they may feel they don't understand very well.
I love that. I love that. Listening for understanding. I mean, that pretty much is what our show is all about, honestly. And I absolutely love the fact that you guys have been able to give us and people who are here in our audience in the state of Utah and beyond, this show's in other cities as well, a chance to listen and understand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from all of us here at PBS Utah, thank you for joining the conversation, for listening to understand.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for more content, information about our guests, and other episodes. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.